This is David Adelman and
Jack Dufresne.
students of Dr. Risha Orzech's class, Geography 375, Qualitative Research Design and Methods of Human Geography. I am interviewing Yael Uziel, class of 2019, for the ISU Alumni Oral History Project on February 23rd, 2024, via Zoom video conferencing software. With Yael, Uziel's permission, this interview will be archived at Milner Library and will be made available for online listening via the university's institutional repository. So to begin the interview, sort of chronologically, would you mind telling me a little bit about your life before ISU?
Sure. So, don't know how far back you want me to go, I guess.
As far back as you'd like.
Okay. Well, I was born in Israel and we moved to America when I started first grade, 2002. And, we moved to Memphis, Tennessee. I loved living in Memphis. Pretty fun. I think Tennessee gets a lot of hate, but it's pretty beautiful out there. There's all the hiking and the mountains and stuff. And then I moved to Illinois for middle school and high school, and I lived in the north suburbs of Chicago. I took environmental science in college, but other than knowing that geography was like maps and capitals, I really didn't understand what it meant to have a degree in geography or anything like that. And it wasn't till I was in college that I took some geography classes for my environmental science, and then I switched my degree.
Okay, awesome. What brought you guys to move from Memphis to Illinois?
Just my parents' work. My mom does medical research, and outside of Chicago, there's a lot of pharmaceutical medical research companies. So she got a job and we moved.
Awesome. And how about moving from Israel to Tennessee? What was the catalyst behind that?
Yeah, so again, my mom does medical research and St. Jude Children's Hospital. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's well-known cancer research hospital. And at the time, my mom just finished her doctorate in Israel and was doing research. And that project was picked up by a scientist at St. Jude's. And it was really last minute, like within 2 months, my family moved to America. Kind of learned English my first year here. My dad would go to school with me and he would translate and kind of learn English himself. And then he also started working at St. Jude and he does like software, website building type jobs.
That's really, really cool. Okay. That's fantastic. You've mentioned that you really enjoy your geography classes. And you also mentioned that you had shifted your degree from environmental science to geography. Can you tell me a little bit about sort of why you initially chose environmental science, then you made a transition? How you chose each of those, and what was the tipping point for that decision?
Yeah, so originally I was biology and environmental science, and think I just chose that because I was kind of good at a couple science classes that I had to take freshman year as part of gen eds. And I knew that I had a passion for environmental research, and actually right now I do work in the environmental sector, like within geography. But what made me switch to geography was I took a class with Dr. Himley, and does he still work there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And we had a guest speaker come in, and Dr. Himley invited me to go to a dinner with that guest speaker and a couple other students and a couple professors. And I think it was one of the first times in education that I felt like I was in my groove and that I was excelling in something kind of naturally and actually interested in it. Not just doing the work because it was required to pass a class. And that professor was at the time doing research about monuments and like statues and how we preserve history while still talking about some of the not so great things that have happened and discussing where monuments are appropriate to be placed and statues, which ones are appropriate, and then the removal of certain statues in different cities as a better way to honor history and the citizens in that area. And I never thought about geography in that way because I really didn't have a modern image of what geography was. So I found that super interesting. And that was my first introduction to human and cultural geography.
Okay, that's really interesting. I like that a lot. Do you remember any details about that project? Do you remember sort of what statues they were particularly looking into?
So the professor was Dr. Derek Alderman, who teaches at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, which is actually why I applied to go there after meeting him. And he's hired by certain communities or cities to do separate ones. At the time, he was working in Chattanooga, Tennessee, but I know he's done a lot, and he has a company called RESET, which stands for Race, Economic, or, yeah, no, Race, Ethnicity, Socioeconomic Tourism, and it discusses tourism, but also being aware of like all those topics. And specifically at the time when I was working with him at grad school, it was for plantation museums, so presidential plantations, so like Monticello and, you know, like Thomas Jefferson's house, George Washington's plantation, all those. How do we make these tourism sites while still talking about the fact that the majority of the land was a plantation and way more slaves lived on that land and experienced that land than anyone even affiliated with the president? But his, that work, when he was giving the talk, he was more talking about like generally what kind of actions people can take and how to have conversations like this that still make it very approachable and not argumentative so that progress can be made. And specifically when, you know, he was working with urban planners and stuff like that, and how local governments don't want to hear that you don't, you know, respect their decisions about the way they built their city or anything like that. So kind of having those conversations and even respecting certain decisions they've made, but just altering it now to like the modern world of what we know is probably a better decision to make and things like that.
That's awesome. That's really cool. That's really progressive, really sort of, I don't know if I want to say cutting edge, but that's really, really good work.
Yeah.
okay. We may circle back around to some more details about that sort of topic. But I'm interested now in a little bit more of general, what lifestyle was like at ISU, what sort of experiences you had, on campus, with your living situations, with clubs and that sort of thing. So can you tell me, were you part of any student organizations or clubs?
Yes, there was. So trying to remember them all, I was treasurer of Capoeira, which is funny because I actually didn't do it. But they sent out a massive email that they needed a treasurer, and I just ended up being the treasurer of that.
Yeah.
And then I was in geography club. I was the treasurer and then vice president. I did, there's a Jewish group on campus, Hillel. I think it's bigger now, but when I was a student, it was like 4 or 5 members. Mm-hmm. I think the Jewish population is a little bit bigger now, but yeah, it was very small. And, I also did meditation club on Fridays. That was great. And the adventure club, which I did spring break trips through, and then also just weekend and day trips, like the canoeing trips. And I don't know if that still exists. I hope it does, but I highly recommend that one. That was the one I probably remember the most because, that and geography club, because we got to go on trips, and that's the best part.
That's really fun. Jack is actually the current treasurer of the geography club.
I love that.
I was just gonna mention that. Yeah. What would you say that your experience as like the treasurer of geography club was like back then?
Yeah. So I remember us doing fundraisers. We'd sell cookies and lemonade. And we'd have trips planned. There'd be usually smaller kind of road trips. But we did go to the Smokies once, which is a little bit farther. And it was like a well-planned trip. It took about, I think, a long weekend. And so we fundraised for that as well. A lot of geography club for us was just meeting, having fun. Sometimes we had speakers. And obviously, again, the things I remember the most were the camping trips. We do an overnight here, an overnight there, usually around campus, nothing too far. But I don't even remember how we did fundraising other than selling lemonade and cookies. I'm sure we had more creative ways that I can't remember now, but there was a while we tried to do that every Friday, and that's how we saved up for more of the bigger trips.
Do you remember any of the specific locations where you guys went on the overnights to?
What's that waterfall in central Illinois?
Oh. It's up north, right?
Like north-north? No.
Not north-north.
North of ISU.
Like Matheson?
Yes, yes. And then we went... We did a night in Chicago too, which was more like urban geography. We did the architecture tour and stuff like that. And then, one of the ones we did, I want to say, was actually technically in Missouri outside of St. Louis. So I think people were interested in going to St. Louis for a day. And then we looked up camping around that area and found an affordable camping ground and kind of did it that way.
Awesome. So, you said you were, part of Capoeira Club, Geography Club, Hillel, Meditation Club, and Adventure Club, right? Was there anything else that I missed in there?
I can't remember. Maybe okay. I tried some out here and there, but I didn't stick with them.
Okay. So why did you, join those organizations? Why did you sort of choose those clubs to, go to initially and then to keep going to?
Yeah. So, Capoeira, I was taking a gen ed that had to do like music history. I don't remember the class, but you could get extra credit for going to certain clubs. That's how I found Capoeira, and I went with a friend. And then that's when I found out they needed a treasurer. So I didn't really stick too much with the activity of the club. Just like Brazilian martial arts and dance. I didn't really do the activity, but I stayed as their treasurer because a club is required to have one. And just when there was board meetings and things like that, I would help out. And then the Hillel, which is the Jewish organization, my parents first recommended to me when I couldn't come home for certain holidays. And the suburb I am from in Chicago has a big Jewish community. And there's probably the first time in my life I didn't have a Jewish community. And I definitely felt that at ISU, not in a negative way. I went to ISU for a change, but there was a comfort to going to Hillel and having a place to be on holidays. And then the Adventure Club, I first found out about it and joined it because freshman year, my roommates and I were looking for a trip to do during spring break. And they had a canoeing trip from the top of Florida, and we canoed all the way down to the ocean. And it was so fun. It was kind of hard, but it was so fun. And we'd camp just on little sand dunes, whatever we could find. And through that, I just got hooked because it was a more affordable way to get to go on cool trips. And they kind of planned everything for you. So I didn't need to have camping gear or a kayak or a canoe. You know, they provided everything. So it made it very accessible because I was living at the dorms for the first 2 years. So I really didn't have room for any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Could I ask a question? You mentioned you just lived in the dorms, right? I'm currently in Waterson. I'm living here for my first 2 years. Kind of wanted to ask though, what was dorm life like back then?
I did Waterson the first 2 years too. I really liked it. I mean, I'm sure in the moment there were times that I didn't like, but now looking back, my memories of it are really nice. I made a lot of friends. Most of my friend group is from, even now, from the dorms. We originally met that way and then, you know, moved out and lived together. But the accessibility and the ease of having the food, like, right downstairs is so nice. And Subway. I don't know if you still have all the Subway locations, yeah. But yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the only thing that sucked was kind of the elevators. And the fire alarms would go off in the winter sometimes because the pipes would burst. Then you'd be outside stuck in the winter for like 2 hours. And I had a kind of a weird, not bad at all, but my roommate freshman year never showed up. So then I got a random roommate. And then they didn't stay for the second semester, so then I got another roommate. So that was a little crazy to, like, be cycling through roommates. But everyone was super nice. I never had an issue. I think dorms come with stories of, like, the neighbors and your roommates and the mess of it all, but when you look back at it, you don't remember those. At least I don't remember those. I just remember, like, it being fun, the fact that I was next to my friends and able to just walk up a couple floors. Oh, you know what sucked was the laundry, though. I don't miss that.
What was the laundry like?
You had to go to the top floor of Waterson. I remember I lived on 14. And coin laundry gets so expensive so quickly. At least it feels that way when you're in college. I'm like, ugh, I don't have quarters. I don't know how to get quarters. I think now you guys can swipe with the card.
There is no. It doesn't cost anything now.
What?
Yeah. I was going to ask, you guys had coins for the laundry back then?
Yes, or you had a swipe.
Wow.
And then I just remember being in, like, laundry's heavy to carry up, and the Waterson elevators could be slow or jammed and all that. So sometimes I carry them up and down. And I just feel like you never do laundry as much as you're supposed to because you're avoiding it.
Yeah, it's a lot more of a chore living here.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked moving to the apartments. I lived on Cherry, which is a pretty good walk, like a pretty nice walk. And I didn't have a car in college, so I got around with the buses and grocery shopped at Kroger with the bus. I really like the bus system there as much as you can for a really small town.
How was the bus system there? So currently today there's like a Redbird Express line that takes you all around campus, and the bus network is pretty good. I'm not sure if the Uptown Station, like Depot, was constructed when you were here. Do you feel like the bus coverage was still pretty good, still pretty easy to get around with?
Yeah, so I didn't use the bus around campus. I used the public bus, and I don't know how it is now, but your card got you free mm-hmm. bus coverage in the area. And I almost only used it for the grocery store. And then One time I took her to Peoria to take the GRE, which is the test you have to take to get into grad school, certain grad schools. And I also took another bus called Peoria Charter all the way up to the north suburbs when I would visit my parents. And I would take it to O'Hare and they would pick me up from O'Hare. And I really liked it. I don't know. I mean, I didn't have a car, so it wasn't another option. And being from the Chicago suburbs, never having a car, it's like I was determined to make the public transportation work. And there were a lot of students that took it. I mean, almost none from what I remember. So I felt cool for taking it. I was like, I'm living life hard. Like, I'm walking to Kroger. I'm doing it the hard way. I felt proud of myself when I would do it. But yeah, I grew to have a routine of it and it became a comfort. I remember like really snowy days. I just take the bus round and around and read my books. So I was like, oh, this is so comforting.
Do you still predominantly rely on public transit or have you embraced the car lifestyle?
I got a car during COVID. I now drive way more than I should. Like, yeah. And I live in North Carolina now, Wilmington, North Carolina, which is a coastal town. We do have bus systems, but yeah, I've never given them a try. I live by downtown, so I can walk and bike to most of the fun stuff, but I drive to a lot of things. Like, even my gym is a block away, and I drive to it most of the time. No excuses there.
It's like
my
sometimes.
Old self would have never done this.
Yeah. COVID really shook it up for a lot of us. How do you have any, so obviously you graduated from ISU by the time that COVID hit. So that wouldn't have impacted your time at ISU. Do you feel like that strongly impacted your time, leaving ISU? And I guess you would have been in grad school at this time, right?
Yeah.
How did that impact that situation?
I think it took all the fun out of school because the most fun parts of classes for me were the discussions and seeing my friends. At the time that I was at ISU, we were a really close-knit community. I mean, even if we weren't all hanging out outside of classes, while we were in class, I felt like we all, it's the same rotation of people. We all started to know each other pretty well. And so the fun parts of classes were the discussions and seeing your friends. And I felt that same way in my master's program. And then when that was removed, also my thesis had to change and a lot of people's had to because anything that was considered travel. So mine was in the Smoky Mountains. And even though that's basically right outside our campus, it's the entrance is the official entrance is about a 40-minute drive from campus, but we're all in the Appalachian Mountains. Mm-hmm. So even though I didn't consider that travel, the schools did because just of exposure, and then they would be held liable for a COVID outbreak or anything like that. So my thesis had to change, and I know a lot of other master's students did. Once the theses had to change last minute, you still wanted to graduate on time, and you weren't in person doing the fun part of stuff. It just felt like you were writing essay after essay. And I experienced burnout really quickly. Like I probably that last year of grad school, the assignments I turned in were my lowest level. Like I never want to read any of those papers again. I probably never proofread them. And that's work I'm honestly not proud of. Not that I even care usually, but I was like, these are so bad. I actually know that they're bad. But the teachers were more lenient at the time. And I felt like I just wanted to get through it. Like I just wanted to finish and get out because it felt brutal. I'm sure I know that I didn't have it as bad as other people during COVID, but it did feel like all the fun of doing a master's program or being in school was just non-existent. And I also feel like the things that you wanted to do for fun, which is maybe see your friends and things like that, like it led to more procrastination and worse habits. And yeah. I don't know. Hopefully you guys had a better time.
sort of. you know, it's like that sometimes.
Yeah.
So speaking of your transition into grad school, do you feel like you got a lot of assistance or help from ISU staff and professors for preparing you for grad school? Or do you feel like you did more of that sort of on your own?
So when I was at ISU, there weren't a lot of students applying to grad school. So we didn't have anyone we could ask specific questions to. So I kind of built my own committee of advisors. And when you apply to grad school, you need 3 reference letters. I think 3 is the generic number. So I chose Dr. Himley because I had a lot of classes with him, RJ, and Kostelnik. And I would meet with them very often, specifically Dr. Himley a lot. And they would help me with applications, my essays. They would proofread them. And then some things I wish I knew more about was how important the GRE was. I didn't take it very seriously. I still got into my schools, but I didn't get as much funding to other schools as I would have liked. And for the University of Tennessee, I was waitlisted on funding. And I knew that I couldn't go to grad school unless I was fully funded, meaning a full ride, but also making money, getting a stipend by being in grad school. So it was a kind of a stressful period because I did really want to go. I felt like because there was no guidance and there weren't other students also applying, and there wasn't students that had already applied that maybe I knew from past years that I could reach out to, that I was kind of wigging it a little bit. And then also my parents didn't go to college in America. My dad didn't go to college, but my parents didn't go to school in America. So the whole process was new to everyone. Like I got invited to a university for interviews and they told me you could bring a partner and I didn't have a partner to bring. So I brought my mom and I was definitely the only one in the interview process. Like they line you all up and it's me and my mom. And I'm like, this, like I was by far the youngest and I was there with my mom and they thought my mom was a student. They were like, oh, like, cause people go to grad school late. They asked my mom. She's like, oh no, I'm her mom. Like she just invited me. And she ended up just leaving in the middle of the day and like waiting at the hotel room. Cause she's like, I don't think I'm supposed to be here. I'm like, yeah, I don't think you are either. My bad. But they were really helpful. I think another thing that helped is there's a lot of really small scholarships at ISU, like $200, $100, $500. And the application process can be costly. It's like $100 here and there for every application. If I remember correctly, the GRE was a couple hundred. And I needed to get that funded in order to do all those things. So I applied to a lot of those. And since they're so small, I don't think other people apply. And that helped fund my way through that. And in a couple of those, when I like accepted the scholarship, I made a contact there. And I would also ask them to read my essays or give me advice for grad school. But Kostelnik, Himley, and RJ were super helpful. And I think since then, a few more ISU students have decided to get their master's. So there's a couple more people. And I've had someone, I didn't know her, but someone gave, one of the professors gave her my contact, and I helped her through the process when she was applying. So, yeah.
That's good. Lots of support. Moms are the best, right? Okay. So about funding and about like figuring out this transition, did you work at all when you were going to college, either on campus or off campus? And what was that?
Yeah. I worked at my main job was at Facility Services. And then I also did geography tutoring for international students. I think I don't remember which professor recommended me to that program. But it was through the international school and specifically for geography students. I would meet with them at their offices like the international school offices, and it was mostly GO 101, but kind of helped them out with their homework and preparing for tests. But most of the time I worked at facility services, which is just janitorials. And I was the secretary, one of the secretaries. I'd just pick up the phone and they'd say, you know, family 102 needs this, this, and this. And I'd redirect it to the right janitor and put in a ticket and also help with time cards and things like that. I got that job because for a little bit I did janitorial work. Wouldn't recommend that. I mean, they don't let students do anything with chemicals. So you just like walk and report things. But then through that, I became a secretary, which is way better. So you got to work on whatever you wanted when you weren't getting calls. And most days were pretty slow. But it is farther. It's not really on campus. It was like a 30 to 40 minute walk.
Okay. So do you feel like you got a lot of good things out of your experience while working at ISU? I guess, like, do you feel like that was sort of a stepping stone in a way, or is that more of just a means to an end, I need money to live?
Yeah, I did it because I needed money, but I enjoyed my coworkers there. The rest of the secretaries were actually all my roommates. We took up the whole floor of secretaries. We were the only ones. And then all my bosses there, I've still been in touch with. We message on LinkedIn just to see how everyone's doing. But yeah, it was just a job to pay, you know, for survival. I feel like the things that I did do to help with geography were more having to do with Geography Club, and being really engaged in my classes helped me make really strong connections with my professors. I mean, I used ISU professors as references for a long time, even past everything, and I still keep in touch and with everything that's going on in Israel right now. Like, a lot of them reached out to me just to see how my family was and things like that. So I feel like career-wise, those were the connections that mattered, not so much my janitorial job.
Well, not just the janitorial job, but yeah, everything, you know. Yeah. The geography, all that stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
that's good to hear. Let's see. Okay, so I have a couple of questions about sort of what you did off of campus and the general community that you found here in Bloomington Normal. Before I get to that, though, so the Jewish group Halal, right? Every now and then on the quad, I see a guy with a table set up. He's just a single guy by himself with a yarmulke, and he's
yeah,
got,
is
like,
he like a he looks like a like a religious rabbi?
Is he the same guy? Who
I
was there when
is.
You were there?
Probably. There, I mean, I don't. I think there's only one rabbi. Like, I don't think there's a synagogue or anything in Normal.
Oh.
So like, he runs it out of his house.
Was he?
And now they built a building.
Was he associated with the Halal group at all?
He ran it. So Halal is or Chabad. Sorry, Chabad. It was I misspoke. It's Chabad at ISU. So that's
Chabad.
Some campuses have Halal. Some campuses have Chabad. He does Chabad. So Chabad is a chain. Feels weird to say, but it's like rabbis get sent out, rabbis and their families who opt into this program get sent out to places in America that don't have, well, it's worldwide, but I will obviously know the American one, but to places that don't have support for a Jewish community. So they may not have enough Jews to have a synagogue, or they just don't have the funding. There hasn't been one in that area. So he was a I'm sure his family opted in, but he was assigned the Normal Bloomington area, and originally they ran it out of their house, and it's him and his wife, and they've had more kids since then, but they had a lot of kids also when I went there, and since then I know they've gotten more funding, and I think they bought a building. I don't know if it's fully running yet, like if it's out of the building, but we used to go to their house. And so I'd either walk there, they had a house kind of off campus, or we'd get rides, like other students would give you a ride. But yeah, he's on campus. I think since he's a rabbi, he's a lot more religious than most of the Jews on campus, like more practicing. But it was nice because him and his wife would cook home cooked meals every Friday and for all the holidays. And just a place for us all to be. Yeah, it was a really nice community, I felt like, when I was there.
Did he ever host events on campus, or were they only like at his house?
So at the time, we didn't have anywhere on campus for events to be hosted. I don't know if that's changed. I also know that when I was in school, I don't like want to get into the politics of it, but we had a different president, and it was just a little more hostile on campus. And I think most Jewish students were looking to, some Jewish students weren't comfortable kind of being like openly practicing Judaism on campus. So that may have changed since then. As the community has gone stronger, but I don't know that that's for certain. I would have been okay. I mean, my name's Yael. I feel like it kind of gives some things away, but I would have been okay going on campus, but I think having that removed did make us all feel a little bit more at home. And none of us had Jewish friends, like, in our group of friends. So it was also a place to kind of, like, detach from school. Like, no one was talking about school that much, as far as, you know, the actual classes and stuff. And people were more just, like, talking about their families and friends and fun and whatever college stresses you usually have.
Okay. So given the political climate and everything that goes into that, would you say you feel supported with your like Jewish identity at ISU? Would you ever say that felt like an unsafe thing to, identify with? Do you have any thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think other groups, other minorities had it harder, but like, so I was at ISU when Trump won the election. And I remember like someone, I was at Waterson. I think the doors are kind of like a fake wood material, if I remember. And someone, I still don't know who it was. Like I never found out or really asked too much around, but someone like etched in a swastika on my door. So I'm assuming they knew, cause I was the only Jew probably on the floor, because I didn't see it on anyone else's door. And I know it wasn't my roommate at the time. We were still close. So, I had that, but campus was pretty crazy that week and that whole month of the election. And then when he won, so I know other students had it worse. And I don't think I had the courage to kind of bring it up to anyone. Just kind of dealt with it. And we, covered it up. Just whatever. And then I think when we moved out, hopefully they replaced that door. I don't know, or fixed it. And then that, like months after that is when I found out about Chabad, and that's when I decided to go. I mean, most of my friends in college are my roommates. I was the first Jew they ever met, and they told me that. And I just, like, I didn't grow up like that. I, in the Chicago suburbs, I'm closer to the city, so you see a bit of everyone and everything. So it didn't feel like I was a minority in any way. But yeah, I think there was support, but there is like the professors were really, really supportive. And my classmates were pretty supportive. I think geography as a whole is very inclusive, but yeah, I'm sure there's definitely people on campus who make comments or worse than that, you know, like the door thing. But I don't know how it is at the time, but students didn't have a good relationship with the police in the area. So it just didn't feel like it was worth bringing anything up to them or reporting anything, just because I didn't feel like it would get addressed. And I didn't want to put myself in that position of having to like feel like I did something wrong, especially because I'm not that religious at all. So it's not like I feel like my Judaism affected anyone's lifestyle on my floor or anything like that. So I think it was just like an act of hate, I guess, after the election.
Sorry to hear about that.
It's all right.
So that was never got reported to the police or anything. Did you share the information with like your RA or with any other sort of figures of authority on campus or any confidants? Did that topic ever come up maybe at Chabad?
Yeah, so at Chabad I did tell them, and then my roommate I think told the RA. I went home that weekend. I was just like, I want to be with my parents, so I took the bus home. And I didn't tell my parents because I knew that would make them really sad. And RA kind of asked me if there's anything I wanted to do about it. And other than just covering it up, I didn't really want to deal with it. And I know a lot of the Black students faced a lot more on campus that week. And it felt like if we wanted things to get resolved, it was a lot of work on us. And I don't think like a lot of us wanted to take on that mental load any more so than people were dealing with already in the day to day at the time. But I think in time, things just faded. You know, like the aggression that was felt that week or month was just like faded. And there was kind of a sense of, you know, that whole era was weird, but it was like life got back to normal for whatever that is. And, you know, life keeps moving. You have homework, you have parties, and you just don't want to think about it. At least I didn't want to.
Okay. Do you feel like the sort of hostilities from that week or month, you mentioned that they kind of tapered off. Is there a particular point in time where you realized that things felt better?
No, I think living off campus, so then the year after that I moved off campus, and that gives you some freedom to surround yourself with who you want to. I mean, not always, of course, like you might be living in a larger apartment complex, but I lived in just a really small one, and I knew almost everyone in my complex, so, and most of them were my friends. We all signed together to be on the same floor. So then you get to surround yourself with who you want to. And also, to be honest, like, I feel like students who, like, if they're Black or they're more religious and then, like, their clothing or their appearance shows that, they face a lot more than people like me who I could have blended in a bit. So, I could be as open with that as I wanted to or not to be. And then there were certain situations where if I felt weird, I just, I don't recommend doing this, by the way, but I just would lie about my name. So I would tell people a fake name, and then my whole family does that. But then one time I told someone a fake name and we ended up being friends. And then I had to be like, actually, my name's Yael. And I don't know how to make myself not sound weird for using a fake name. But if it was like a certain party or just an event where I was like, it's best not to bring it up. Also at the time around campus in downtown Bloomington, there was a lot of women's marches going on, and my group of friends, we were really involved in those. And I think we found a good community in that within Normal and Bloomington, not specifically college kids. And then there was also an immigration rally, when there was conversations about the wall and everything. And I spoke at one of those about, I mean, like being a Middle Eastern immigrant and moving to America the year after 9/11. And just like, that I think that encouragement made me feel more open about speaking about things, but also helped me put things into perspective where it's like you can choose how defeated you let words get to you. Like, and the more it affects you, sometimes the harder it is for you to do anything about it, which is how I felt at the beginning. So I think having that community that I could kind of vent to, and then if I wanted to take any action, find petitions or rallies, that helped a lot. And my friends were super helpful with that too. Like, they would give me rides to downtown Bloomington, or we would all go together a lot of times, make posters and whatnot.
Wow. Okay. It sounds like you really were able to find your people and cultivate like a really nice community. So apart from the women's marches and the immigration rallies, did you participate in any other sort of activism in the Bloomington Normal community?
No, honestly, I didn't. We went to some marches up in Chicago. But by the time Black Lives Matter marches were really happening, I was in Tennessee already. And I think that there's also a balance when you're in college of just enjoying college and having fun. And then also being involved in your community. So I don't know if I found the perfect balance. I may have leaned a little bit more into having fun, but then there were definitely months where events would happen on campus or someone I knew was experiencing something, and then it would kind of like motivate us all again to get involved.
Okay. You also mentioned something about filing petitions. Did you ever engage in that? Did you ever actually have a desire to file a petition about something?
Yeah, so we had I don't know if this still exists, but there was a Planned Parenthood in Bloomington, and we filed petitions for the bus line that went there to stay open because there was debates about that. I mean, the bus line didn't just go there. It went like to that general area and had other stops, but there were at the time communications about that bus line being, or that bus stop being moved, and we did a petition. I mean, I didn't specifically start the petition, it was just part of it for that one. And then the woman's, so there's health insurance through ISU, and then there's the health clinic, and there were petitions about more accessible free women's health resources. I don't know if this still exists, but at ISU there used to be like Find the G Spot. It was a tent with condoms and stuff. But then there were people saying like it would be really nice to get free menstrual products if we could afford free condoms as a campus. So I remember that was one that was more talked about on campus, and yearly checkup for women's for like a cancer check, because that's a common thing women have to do when they're adults. Just go to a gynecologist and get like checked for any lumps and bumps for cancer. So that was one that they petitioned to have as a free resource available on campus. And I don't know if it is still, but I think that is something you can check, you can make an appointment for.
So I wouldn't have the information on that, but
Yeah.
I can say that every bathroom on campus, men's and women's, now has free menstrual products,
Oh,
available
that's
to
cool.
students.
That's awesome.
I have seen the G Spot. They set up shop outside of the dining hall at Watterson quite frequently still. So that's still going
They're
around.
still running.
Yeah.
Well,
That's
that's good
awesome.
too.
I love the community activism. When you weren't so busy, making the world a better place, what sort of places did you like to go in the Bloomington Normal area to just hang out, relax, socialize? On campus, off campus, Bloomington Normal, really, what'd you like to do?
Yeah, so I feel like if I was socializing with geography people, a lot of times we'd either go to each other's houses or we'd go to the lab and kind of get work done, but also just really chat and help each other with our labs. And then there was Medici downtown with my friends as a hostess there. So we'd go during the, I don't know if it was a formal happy hour or if she would just give us a bit of a discount on certain items when we were there. And the whole downtown Normal, I loved. I loved DPDO, and the bar scene in that area. I lived on Cherry, and in the, if it got even slightly nice, I feel like everyone was in their front yard or on walks. And now that I live in North Carolina and the weather's nice most of the time, I do feel like people don't appreciate that first month of good weather. And I loved when everyone would be on campus. There was a trail behind Cherry. I'm trying to remember what it was called, but we would do that all the time. The,
Is it Constitution Trail?
yeah, Constitution Trail. Yeah.
Okay.
We, like, I was there all the time. And There's a few community gardens in the area, and actually my boyfriend calls me Peter Rabbit because I would sometimes they'd have weeks or days where you could go free for students, where it was like end of a season for tomatoes or whatever, so it was like kind of the mushier ones every once in a while, and I would make him drive me because I didn't have a car, and I'd go to the community gardens and Peter Rabbit my way through whatever they allowed us to take. We'd make some recipes at home and salsas and whatnot.
That's fun. I hope that still happens. I'm going to have to look into that for myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. Okay. So you mentioned, like the election was a big thing that happened during your time at ISU. Can you recall any other major news stories that impacted your time on campus?
I don't know if anything could beat that time or that election as far as like really shaking the grounds. I honestly don't have a good memory if any other big things were happening that weren't like surrounding that on campus. I don't know if I can remember anything other than topics relating to the election at the time. There was like a lot of that month, a lot of things changed. Like even assignments we had and books we were supposed to read, my English professor changed her book. And I feel like normal Bloomington's pretty split, demographic wise. And that was the first time I really felt that, because I guess at that age, I also assumed that people just had the same political view as I did, because I also came from a place that generally did. And what I loved about ISU when I visited was that it was so different from what I knew when I grew up, but I don't think I realized that magnitude of the difference and what that means until I experience that. And I don't even see it as all negative. Like, I think that's very important to get a grasp of what is reality in America, what are people's opinions. And especially then in grad school, I saw that more living in Tennessee, and it taught me a lot more about like why people think the way they think, because I knew what I was thinking and what my friends were thinking and how we could back up our thoughts. But then seeing in Tennessee of the concerns that people had, and how that felt way more real to them than some social issues, it did open up my mind to like, okay, this isn't like good versus evil necessarily. Sometimes it's just like people are in a certain situation and they're also looking for a way to get their lives better. And they feel like they have to focus on their families and themselves, and they don't know what the best solution is for that. Like, they're just listening to the person who thinks they can give you them a solution to that. That made me more empathetic about everything, and I think is better for when discussions like that come up. And also, like, with everything that is happening in the Middle East, being Israeli, it's like I've had to become good at navigating really hard discussions. Like, every other person you talk to has the solution. And it's never all that simple. It's like really easy to take a side without considering what it's like for, you know, people actually in very different situations who are trying to just make better life for themselves and their families. So I appreciate that I learned that. I just didn't appreciate it at the time. It was harder to appreciate it at the time with everything going on.
Well, I applaud your ability to navigate that situation and take something away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot of wisdom that was just spoken right there, like about just understanding political differences and stuff like that.
I probably could be better at it, but it does. Also, moving around a lot. I work remote. My boyfriend works remote. So, like, we move around quite a bit just for fun. And that's taught me a lot, too, like seeing different towns and cities and stuff.
So given some of the challenges you faced, is there was there any was there like any particular locations on campus or in Bloomington Normal that did not feel safe? Was there neighborhoods or establishments that at the time you felt like I probably shouldn't go there, like out of concern for your own well-being or mental health?
This time there was some fraternity, not that I was not in Greek life, so this wasn't super relevant to me, but I did go out, especially before the age of 21, if felt like more fun places to go out were like house parties or fraternity related parties. And there were some that they made their opinions pretty clear after the election, so then those were definitely places for me to avoid. But I think as a woman, you hear a lot of experiences on campus and you see a lot of them too. So there's this bridge of like, you want to experience all the fun, normal things in life. But you have to be really alert and you're never as careful as you think you are. Like, you're never too careful, but I also wouldn't recommend people to be paranoid. Like, I don't think that's a enjoyable way to go through campus life. So I don't know what the solution is for that, other than I wish there was a better relationship between students and the police. Like, I don't know a single female that felt really comfortable reporting things to the police when things happened. And not just females, like I do know it happened to males on campus too. Just people in general. At least while I was there, it felt like the police was just trying to ticket everyone for everything and get their money, and there wasn't any good communication there or like any way to talk to police without also getting yourself in trouble, especially if you were at a party or anything like that. So that's like the one thing that was really hard about ISU is normal Bloomington police is really, really harsh, and just at the time they were not a good contact for students. And so I don't know. Like, it wasn't that there weren't safe places, it was that everything you did had a certain level of risk. Because if anything did happen, you probably wouldn't have felt comfortable calling. Unless it was like life or death type of thing.
Absolutely. Do you have any particular examples of negative interactions with the police that happened to you or people close to you you'd like to share?
I guess one of them was downtown. I was getting late night food with a friend, and we saw I don't know if she was a student, 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure she was. Like, I almost remember her having a student ID, but it wasn't that late. It was maybe like 8 or 9, and she was on the street, basically blacked out, like clearly had been drugged, and she couldn't, we called the police because I didn't have a car, like I couldn't get her to an ambulance or anything like that. And, she had tried to get up and she was using, not out of rudeness, but she was like using the cop to get up. Like, she couldn't function at all. And they kept telling her, they're like, don't put your hands on us or we're gonna write you up for assault. And I was like, this woman is blacked out. Like, she clearly was drugged. Like, so clearly, like, doesn't, it's not like, oh, she was drunk, like, she was drugged for certain. And I remember I was like, oh, I don't know this girl, and I don't feel like I can't go in the cop car with her. Like, it wasn't an ambulance where you could go with someone. And I was like, I just don't know that this was this a smart decision. Like, I feel like it probably saved her life, but I don't know that it got her out of trouble. Like, I'm worried that it got her into more trouble. And then I know that on campus, like for us, if we saw girls at parties or at downtown Bloomington who were probably in a dangerous situation, like we just have them sleep over even if we didn't know them. I'm like, it would have been nicer if there was a service we would have called to like have them drive them to their own place and get them to safety and not feel like they had to sleep on a stranger's couch because, you know, they didn't have any other resources. that day, especially because I feel like if they had their friends or someone else to look out for them, like they maybe could have called the cops and had a conversation about maybe what did happen or got tested or things like that. Whereas you're like 21, you're just kind of figuring out what decisions you want to make on other people's behalf, let alone for yourself. Yeah, and there's obviously like worse stories, but I just feel like those aren't good to share. I don't want to share them right now, but yeah, like I just didn't feel like there was a good resource for any of that.
Absolutely. So do you feel like there was a really strong community of women on campus and in the general area looking out for each other at the time?
Or do you feel? But I think it's also, I think there was to an extent, but then I also think there was like victim blaming and stuff. And it just depends on the circle of friends you had and also because the circle of friends that the other person involved in the story had. And who had maybe a more dominant group of friends on campus, whether it was in Greek life or in other avenues. And then, I also felt like that the woman who did report things, you know, it was like you'd get a massive email, like an event happened on this reported event at this address at this time of night or whatever they used to send out, whether it was a text or an email. And so I think I know some girls were like, oh yeah, everyone knew it was me because that email went out and even my teachers found out and things like that. So it's like, one way I'm glad that the police came and maybe they did help or maybe they didn't, but another, it's like, oh, that's a really hard situation because now you're navigating life having to answer questions about like such a traumatic thing. Yeah, I don't know if that's better at all now or like people can choose if that email gets sent out or not. But yeah, at the time it felt like a not private thing for people to go through. Like people I didn't even know, you know, you would hear about because that email would get out and then they were in your class the next day or something. So I feel like most people didn't want to call the cops. They don't want to have to deal with all that. Like they weren't ready to, which is fair.
That's rough. That's a rough situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, like, I don't have the perfect solutions, but I do think I don't feel like the solutions would be all that hard to come up with, at least, like, or just slightly better situations and changes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jack, do you have any major topics you'd like to hit on during the interview?
I feel like we've covered about everything. Really, we've covered quite a bit. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, we talked about community, what you did off campus, extracurriculars, relationships with professors. There was a lot, so I don't think I have anything else to really ask.
Well then, Yael, is there anything that we have failed to ask that you would like to contribute?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I had a great time at ICU. I know we ended on a rough note there, but I loved my geography community. I still keep in touch with a lot of the students and we still are references for each other, which I recommend doing because like they'll get a job in geography and you'll get a job in geography and then you don't have to use only your professors for references and it looks like you work together even though. You don't really have people in the workplace yet to write you a reference. But yeah, I really love the department. If you get a chance to study abroad, I recommend it with geography. I don't know if they still do the trips to Baja or Japan.
Did you go on either of those?
I did Japan, and I recommend it. But Baja, like, that group also had a blast, and it looked like they did some awesome things.
Do you want to share any anecdotes about your trip to Japan? That was with Dr. Rowley, right?
Yeah. So I did that, and I actually did the Chicago one, too. Japan was incredible, and I feel like that's a trip you couldn't do on your own because you need a translator in Japan. So having Dr. Rowley like translate everything was so nice, and you got to see – we basically hiked the whole island. So it was incredible. Like, we even saw an active volcano and went to a baseball game. I went to the sumo world championships that year. Yeah, it was wild. So that was a trip that I saved up for and I was so excited for. And then the Chicago one, that was super interesting because I had obviously been to Chicago a lot of times because I lived outside of Chicago. Some of the other students had never been to Chicago. And even then, I was still learning about neighborhoods I'd never been to. And we went to the art museum one night when it was like a night off, or like we finished research. And that was so fun to do with friends and kind of like new friends. That was pretty early on into me being a geography student that I signed up for that. So that's where I made a lot of my peers that were friends, that became friends. And those connections, a lot of them still stayed. And it's a really fun way to see another side of your professor. It's like, I know RJ brings one of his kids sometimes to his trip. So we had one of his sons come with us for Japan. And that was fun because he was right around our age and just like fun to see that side of your professors a bit more goofy. And even though I think the geography professors are pretty real, like you don't hold too much back. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So geography club, Chicago club, or geography trip, Chicago trip. You didn't go on the Baja California trip though, right?
No. At the time you could only do, it's like they were each every other year. So it was hard to sign up for both and get both because there was limited spots. But mine just worked out that it was Japan and I don't regret that. Though I know the Baja one looked amazing. Like people love that trip. So I'm sure you can't go wrong with either.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, we have exceeded our 60-minute timer here, and that's not an issue for me. With respect to your time, though, I think we're looking at wrapping it up. I'm going to give one more formal chance for anecdotes and questions to be made, and then as many informal chances as we need until we feel like we're satisfied. Yael, Jack, anything? No? Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Yael. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I feel like we've gotten a lot of really good information, and this is going to be an excellent entry into the ISU oral history report. Thank you so much for your time. And it's a small community. I'm sure, you know, ISU geography students seem to keep together pretty well, so our paths may cross again someday. And yeah. Thank you so much for everything.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
If you guys have any questions in the future or even when you're applying to jobs or whatever, feel free to reach out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, have a good day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Okay. We're still recording. I'm going to stop recording.